recent op-ed in the New York Times proclaimed, "Butter is back," and questioned the advice that many of us have been following to limit our intake of saturated fats. We'll talk about the latest research in the butter versus margarine debate, and we'll welcome your questions about fats. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, March 31st. Do you use butter or margarine, and why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. We are very happy to have with us Marisa Pruitt. She is a registered dietitian specializing in weight management at Gunderson Health System. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being back with us. Well, this op-ed noted a, I guess it was an analysis of other health studies. It was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and it found that there was no evidence to support the belief that saturated fat increases the risk of heart disease. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I've been hearing more and more of this over the last probably year or so, that the studies were really inconclusive regarding saturated fats' association with cardiovascular disease and just overall health risk. And this is great because, in my mind, butter never left the arena. Yeah. But for most people, they switched to margarine right away and they started cutting back fat. And, you know, the 90s were a huge boom of low fat, no fat. And I think what's happened is it's caused more health problems than we originally thought. And now we're thinking, yeah, maybe we should take a step back and look at saturated fat as maybe being important to our diet again.
Well, it's interesting because, yeah, I was among those who started doing the low fat, no fat thing. And I saw some graphs that showed right when we were doing that, that's when our obesity problem really started taking off too.
Absolutely. You know, the interesting thing about the meta-analysis through the Internal Medicine Journal, it found that even decreasing cholesterol didn't really decrease our cardiovascular risk. It's such a controversial topic, and I think we kind of forget that when fat was discovered, it was called vitamin F. It was considered so very important to our health, and that was back in 1923. And then in 1929, they thought, well, maybe fat should be more considered a macronutrient rather than a vitamin. And so that's where, you know, fat kind of originated. But we need fat for just normal growth and development, for energy, to absorb our fat-soluble vitamins, cushion our organs, maintain our cell membranes, and then not to mention the satisfaction that we get with eating. Mm. If you've ever had fat-free ice cream, it's so not satisfying. Mm. The fat in that ice cream is what makes ice cream ice cream.
Yeah, and the argument goes that if you have some fat, you are going to be satisfied and then maybe not overload on other foods because you're still really hungry.
Correct. Fat, we consider as our backup generator. It provides some really long-lasting energy when it's consumed with other nutrients that help it work that way. So it is so very important, and the satisfaction that it provides, the taste, palatability, consistency that it provides for our meals is just, there's nothing like it.
So can we take this meta-analysis then, the findings of this study, as a green light to eat as much butter, steak, cheese as we would like?
No.
Why not?
Yeah, I'm the, I don't know, poster child, I guess, for moderation in all things. You know, certainly when we look at fats, they are twice the calorie per gram as protein and carbohydrates. So they're very nutrient and very energy dense. And so we have to be careful of how much we're eating and how often we're eating them still, because they do provide additional calories to our diet. And so, you know, it's okay that you eat butter if you like margarine. You know, we can look for a margarine that's a little bit healthier. But when it comes to, you know, steaks and things like that, we still want to moderate our intake of that. And what I mean by that is balancing the fats and the animal products with plant-based products too. Our bodies are designed to eat all types of food, and so we need to have a balance of a variety of different things. And we know that fruits and vegetables are important to that equation.
Can you give us a little, I don't know, fats 101 lesson? I mean, you know, you hear about saturated fats or healthy fats or, you know, trans fats. What are the different types of fats?
Sure. So trans fats are hydrogenated fats. They're man-made, and there are some naturally occurring trans fats as well. But they're mostly found in things like margarine shortening, like Crisco, fried foods, processed or convenience foods, and snack foods. And really what we want to look for is, in the ingredients list, looking for the word hydrogenated. That means that there's trans fat in that product. And labels can say 0 grams trans fat or trans fat free on the front of the package, or even on the nutrition label it can say zero, and still have up to a half a gram in the product. And so we need to be careful of that, because trans fat raises our LDL, the bad cholesterol, in our body, and lowers the HDL, the good cholesterol, in our body. And so those are the ones that we really need to limit.
Yeah. And what else is there then?
Saturated fats are found mostly in animal products, but they are found in a few plant-based products, like coconut oil is a prime example of a saturated fat that's from a plant. But it's also found in all of our animal products, so meat, dairy products, eggs, things like that. And it does raise our LDL, or we're thinking that it does, but not in the same manner as trans fat does. And actually, saturated fat, we're starting to find, has a protective mechanism when it comes to heart disease and things like that. So this one we still want to moderate just because of its calorie density, but more importantly, we want to look at the source, looking at a whole food source rather than something from a highly processed, highly packaged food item.
Mm-hmm. Then what are the What are the olive oils and that? What kind of fat is that?
Yeah, so those are what we consider to be our healthy oils. So our healthy oils are monounsaturated and polyunsaturated. Monounsaturated fats, they do lower our bad cholesterol, but keep our good cholesterol high. And so we can find those in canola oil, olive oil, peanut oil, avocados, nuts, peanut butters, things like that. And then our polyunsaturated fats are mostly found in our fish products, so salmon, tuna, herring, things like that. We can find some polyunsaturated fats in plant sources, flaxseed, canola oil, soy products, and walnuts, but they're not utilized as well in the body. So that's where this whole idea of eating fish a couple times per week comes from, is for those polyunsaturated omega-3 fatty acids.
And what is the omega-6 fatty acid?
The omega-6, it's one that we Americans really don't have to try to get. We get omega-6 in corn oil, safflower, sunflower oil, and a lot of our processed and packaged foods contain these oils. And when we don't have enough omega-3 to balance out the omega-6, we can get a lot of diseases. Some experts would say that it may be the cause of inflammation in our body, which could lead to heart disease and diabetes and things like that. So we really need a balance of both. And omega-3 is the one we don't get enough of. So that's the one we really need to focus on.
So there is there's a lot of fat information out there. So
there.
if you could boil it down then to one paragraph of advice, so what should we follow when it comes to fat in our diet?
If I could boil it down to just a couple of sentences, avoid trans fats. Really look at your ingredients label and find out what's in it. Our marketing and food industry is really great at making us think that foods are healthy by, you know, all this stuff on the front of the package. But you're going to get the most information from the ingredients list. So look for the fats, look for that word hydrogenated, and avoid the products that have that. And then moderate the other types of fat, because they are calorie dense, yet we do need them, and they are important, and we need them at every single meal, but choosing plant-based products most of the time, and fish.
Yeah, but I didn't have to spray that I can't believe it's not butter on my whole grain English muffin this morning. I could have put regular old butter on it.
you could have put regular old butter on it. And I often tell my patients too, you know, if you like your vegetables with a little bit of butter on it, that's fine. You know, salad dressing was created to put fat on our lettuce so that we could absorb those fat-soluble vitamins from the lettuce. So, you know, fat-free dressing is pointless. It's taste, but it's really not doing the job that it was meant to do. And so, you know, the butter on your English muffin is the same thing. It's going to help us absorb those fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K.
And, boy, I'm not sure fat-free dressing really has taste either.
True. Very true.
Well, this is all good news to me. What about you? Do you have questions about fats in your diet? And what do you make of the growing amount of evidence that perhaps we have been unfairly and unnecessarily avoiding saturated fats, that now butter is making a comeback, according to this recent op-ed in the New York Times? Is butter back in your household? Do you use butter or margarine, and why? Or maybe butter never left. 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your questions and your fat eating habits. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 21 minutes past 6 on this Monday, March 31st. Talking about fats in our diet, we're talking about why butter is making a comeback, and welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, did you give up butter when researchers said it might increase your risk of heart disease? And now, are you reconsidering that decision? Well, we're getting some expert advice from Marisa Pruitt, a registered dietitian. She specializes in weight management with Gunderson Health System. And we're welcoming your questions for her. Alex in Madison is with us first. Hi, Alex.
Yes, good morning. Hi. First off, I've been doing Mediterranean diet before Mediterranean diet was popular. First-generation Italian, so it's always been in the household.
Mm-hmm.
Butter has always been in the house. And I agree 100% regarding moderation for everything. That it would be work, play, eat, and drinking, even alcohol. My question would also be to the dietitian is, the studies that are now coming out, how are they so different than the ones that we were supposed to listen to years ago? Is it newer technology that they were able to figure out now that the oils that we need to eat to be able to consume and digest the greens in our salads are better now? But did they not have this type of technology before? Or were they trying to sell us margarine way back when?
Hmm.
And, you know, if you listen to a study today, 2 weeks from now, you have a contraindication type of study.
Yeah, how did this come about, Marisa? If you know, why were these studies, you know, 40 years ago saying eliminate butter, use margarine?
Yeah, this is a great question, Alex. Ironically, nothing has changed. This meta-analysis actually just went back into the archives and looked through all of the studies that had previously existed to figure out where this idea of saturated fat causing an increase in our cardiovascular risk came from. And what they found was that there really was no basis for it, or very, very little. They found through all of the studies that were done previously that saturated fat intake does not increase our risk for cardiovascular disease. And they looked at, you know, the ages of the participants, the sex of the participants, the quality of the study, and none of those had any impact on that message that saturated fat doesn't cause those problems. However, I think what happened was we were kind of grasping at straws. Heart disease was on the rise, and researchers were just trying to find anything that might lead to the problem. And so what we did was we found that, you know, fats might cause heart disease, might being the keyword. And so we should probably limit them. And what we did was we created this craze of low fat, no fat, which increased dramatically our intake of sugar and processed foods that contained no fat, but also no nutrients. And then now we've created a monster. And what they found throughout all of these archives was that actually decreasing carbohydrates and decreasing sugar intake lowered our cholesterol, lowered our LDL, and lowered our risk for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah, isn't that something? Well, mm-hmm. David writes a similar question on Facebook. How long before the next major study totally counters this commentary? Mm-hmm. I mean, this, though, because this was an analysis of all of the studies for the past 40 years, that it seems as though this one might be on the money.
Yeah, and again, you know, nothing has changed. This meta-analysis actually just went back into the archives and re-reviewed mm-hmm. everything that was there. And, you know, I completely agree with our callers and that when is the next study going to come out where it contradicts everything that I'm saying right now? And what I usually tell my patients is nutrition is an evolutionary, not revolutionary process. We only know what we know when we know it. And with more technology and more research and more education and, you know, ultimately more knowledge, we learn more. And I think that whole idea of moderation is even more so important because there is no one food that's going to make us fat or make us thin or give us heart disease or take it all away. But we have to be moderate with our diet, and we have to look at the quality of the foods that we're eating. You know, if we're just trying to get the biggest bang for our buck and we're trying to get as much food as we possibly can for the dollar, we're sacrificing a lot of the quality. And that's maybe where things are going awry as well.
This makes me laugh. John writes on Facebook, when I was a boy, margarine was outlawed in Wisconsin. So we had butter all the time, and we never switched to the fake stuff. I have an opposite experience in that I don't know why my dad thought it would be worthwhile to take a trip to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and buy oleo margarine. I'm not sure if he thought it tasted better or if it was cheaper, but we did go to the contraband way back when I was a kid. That was more the dairy interests in Wisconsin that wanted to keep dairy on the table rather than oleo margarine. Do you know about that?
You know, I really don't know much about that. I do know that margarine was very, very popular in World War II when just all resources were at a minimum. And so man-made products were a lot easier to produce than some of the natural resources. And that's where margarine really got its start, I guess.
That's more than I knew, and maybe my dad developed a taste for it in World War II. I don't know.
Yeah, it was funny when it was developed. Most people hated it, and they found the white color to be very off-putting, and so manufacturers started making it yellow so that it would more resemble butter, and then it kind of flew off the shelves, and people loved it. So
it's
really funny.
Liz in Dodgeville is with us. Hi, Liz.
Hi, I have a comment and a question, and then I'll get off of here. As soon as I started doing sort of independent research on nutrition as a teenager, I started eating butter and eating healthy and whole grains. But I grew up in a family that had margarine. What appeared to me is that the hydrogenation of fats was to keep it on the shelf longer, so it's economical in that way. But I was also wondering, Marissa, if you could comment on the benefit of grass-fed beef, because by grain finishing our beef, which is never how beef used to be, we've really changed the makeup of the meat and made it quite unhealthy. And my understanding is that the grass-fed beef kind of rivals wild salmon as a healthy alternative, and I'll get off the air. Thank you.
Grass-fed versus grain-fed beef and a difference in its health? Does grain-fed beef have omega-3s in it?
Grass-fed does, actually.
Oh, grass, yes.
The grass-fed beef more mimic what cows are supposed to do, graze. They eat a variety of different plant foods, and the amount of grain that they actually eat is minimal. They might get a few grains in the grasses that they're eating, but for the most part, they're grazing on a variety of different grasses and things like that, and thus their omega-3 content increases. Compared to grain-finished beef, where they're more than likely in a food lot, or feedlot, excuse me, where they're not getting a whole lot of exercise, they're being fed a grain-based, solely grain-based diet, and they just don't have the omega-3 content. A lot of people who switch from grain-finished beef to grass-fed beef notice a very different taste in the beef right away. You know, corn is that sweet flavor, and therefore that translates into the flavor of the meat. And so grass-fed beef has gotten a slow start, but I think the more people learn about how cows are treated and what they're fed, and, you know, that cows really shouldn't be eating a whole lot of corn, if any at all.
Let me hold you there because we have news, and then we'll be back. Butter is back. So proclaimed a recent op-ed in the New York Times, citing this meta-analysis of health studies that was published in the Journal of Annals of Internal Medicine that found there's no evidence to support the notion that saturated fat increases the risk of heart disease. So we are talking about fats in our diet and wondering if you use butter or margarine, and why. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Monday, March 31st. We are talking with Marisa Pruitt, a registered dietitian specializing in weight management at Gunderson Health System. And just before news time, Marisa was answering a question from a caller who wanted to know if grass-fed beef was healthier in terms of the fat than grain-fed beef, and had a couple of other questions, and we will pick up after the news with Marissa's answer. So grass-fed beef does have healthier fat in it, Marisa?
Correct. Yeah, typically when cows are allowed to graze naturally and eat a variety of different grass sources, the omega-3 content of their flesh and then the meat that we eat is higher. And the caller had also mentioned something about hydrogenation and that hydrogenated oils have a longer shelf life. And so I wanted to touch a little bit on that, too, because that caller was absolutely correct. Hydrogenation is a process where our liquid vegetable oils become a solid, and within that process, we add a lot of hydrogen, and those fats become trans fats then. And they're cheaper than animal fats. They have a longer shelf life, and they have a desirable texture, and so that's why we find them in so many baked goods. And the reason I wanted to touch on hydrogenation is because we've gotten into a habit of creating these fake foods, if you will. They look like real food, they taste like real food, but they don't have the properties that our real food should. And so that's kind of why the butter is back thing is so important. Butter is natural. There's nothing other than some churning that has to happen in order to make butter butter. Hydrogenation is a very different story.
Yeah. So when Mark Bittman, the writer of this op-ed, Butter is Back, says that the real villains in our diet are sugar and ultra-processed foods, he's right?
I agree 100% with that. I tell my patients all the time that we need to get back to eating real food. And what I mean by that is really looking at how much processing is done in our food. To some extent, every single food that we eat is processed. I mean, if we husk corn and, you know, remove the kernels from the cob, that is technically processing it. But, you know, once we make that corn into something else, you know, then, I mean, it becomes processed. And I think that's where our health problems are coming from. No longer is our priority to eat real foods, whole foods, like, you know, apples. It's to eat this, you know, blueberry pomegranate cereal that doesn't have a trace of either of those berries in it and think that we're eating healthy. It's, you know, eating a cheese puff that says made with real cheese, yet, you know, there can't be one small trace of real cheese in that puff. So, you know, really looking at our ingredients lists and getting back to eating real food and prioritizing our money on eating real food.
Yeah. And the Special K with red strawberries. Why not just put real strawberries in your cereal, right?
Right. I mean, those red strawberries are hydrogenated oil and high fructose corn syrup. So not really a strawberry.
Yeah. And they don't taste like one either.
No.
Which I just confessed I've eaten that. But anyway, John in Madison is with us. Hello, John.
Hello. I read a symposium on arteriosclerosis in March of 2014, and they had three conclusions. This was from a medical journal. One was to avoid obesity. A third of Americans are obese. Two, to avoid calorie excess, in other words, binge overeating. And third was to keep the fat content to 25 to 30% of the calories in the diet. I just wondered, would you advise the average person to look at the the fat content of their food and keep their daily intake in the 20 gram to 40 gram range, or do you have any specific recommendations?
Sure. Typically, I look at overall quality of the diet, and we range anywhere from 15 to 30%, maybe even 35% of the diet. And again, it's really the type of food that we're eating, quality over the actual grams and numbers, I think. Oftentimes, I feel like Americans get really caught up in the numbers, yet we miss the big picture on things. We can be within our calorie range, but if we're just eating fake food, is what I call it, fake food, it's not providing us with the quality that we need. So if our sources are things like nuts and avocados and fish and things like that, I don't think that there's any problem in having a bit of a higher fat content.
Yeah. What's your take on this craze, the coconut oil craze that is out there right now, where it's similar to the butter versus margarine debate? We were told to avoid coconut oil, and now people are saying, boy, this is a miracle oil.
Yeah, so I think coconut oil in one part is kind of a fad right now, but we were told in the past to limit it because it was a saturated fat, a plant-based saturated fat. However, you know, now that we know more about saturated fats, we're finding that maybe they aren't so bad for us as before. I think, again, it's about variety and moderation. And if we're only getting one type of fat, like just coconut oil, we're, again, missing the whole point of variety in our diet. I think coconut oil is just fine, and if you like that and you like to use it in your cooking, it's certainly fine. We need to watch the portion of it because, again, it's very calorie-dense, very nutrient-dense, but otherwise, just fine.
Yeah. So the coconut encrusted French toast that I had on vacation while I was on a tropical island was good for me.
So you were getting some plant-based saturated fat right there, yes.
Yeah. And I was getting some eggs on that French toast. Again, the fat in eggs is saturated fat, but that's okay too?
Yeah, eggs are, interestingly enough, the protein that all other proteins are judged against. So it is considered to be the highest quality, best complete package of a food. So, again, the amount of fat that we're getting in the egg is going to be really small. The cholesterol that we're going to be getting is pretty minimal, and it's from a natural whole food source. If we can get some chickens that have been able to graze rather than being cooped up, even better, some free-range chickens. But, you know, those eggs are going to be just fine.
Ron in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Ron.
Hello, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. You know, my grandparents and my parents and their parents all lived on cream, butter, salt pork, bacon, you name it, and it was all natural, where we didn't have all these chemicals put in it that you cannot, understand, you can't pronounce them, and it makes them last forever. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on all the additives that are being put in our food today.
Oh, gosh. Well, I grew up on a dairy farm where I was raised on red meat and whole milk out of the bulk tank that was not pasteurized in my mom's huge garden. And so, I mean, I am a little biased on this topic, but I agree. I think that our food industry has been able to get away with a lot of things because we as consumers don't ask enough questions. And interestingly enough, every time you go to the grocery store and you check out, and those barcodes are scanned, you're voting on the type of food that you want to eat. And if we choose the cheapest foods with the most preservatives, the most additives, that is what our food industry will continue to make. They will meet the demands. And if we choose differently, then we might be able to get away from some of these additives and things like that. Most of the products in our grocery store can last years. I mean, they might have an expiration date of a year, but, you know, they have a lot of stuff in them that could last years. So really looking at that ingredients label and being able to pronounce the things in your food and know what they are. I mean, if they're spices and things like that, great. But if they're things that you can't even Google and find information on, we probably need to take a second glance at those items.
Yeah, the op-ed by Mark Bittman says what does he say here? The days of skinless chicken breasts and tubs of I can't believe it's not butter may finally be drawing to a close. Do you think so?
I hope so. Mm. You know, again, I mean, I grew up on a farm, so I knew exactly where my food was coming from, and got to, you know, pull carrots out of the ground and brush the dirt off and eat them right then and there. And, you know, chickens that were roaming the farm and things like that. And now, you know, when we look at our major food production, you know, these chickens are penned up. They're genetically changed so that they produce bigger breasts because all we want is breast meat. You know, mm-hmm. how often have Americans really bought whole chickens and used the whole thing? So again, you know, every time we go to the grocery store, we're voting on what we want. And if we continue to purchase our food the way that we are, we're telling our food manufacturers that that's okay and that's what we want.
Yeah. Bill writes on Facebook, I couldn't agree more with the notion that the true villain of the modern diet is processed food in general. Nutrition research is notoriously complex to conduct and to interpret. To decide whether something is good for us, we need a framework. If man made it, don't eat it. How about that?
I love that. You know, I don't think that we can 100% get away from man-made food. And in fact, I wouldn't advocate that. I tell my patients 80-20. 80% of what we eat needs to be nutritious. It needs to be whole. It needs to be healthy. And then, you know, we're going to have times where we want to order that pizza or go out for dessert or, you know, things like that, or have those packaged items. And as long as it's in balance and it's moderate, I don't think there's a problem in that. And it's very unrealistic to think that we're not going to eat all of the abundant foods that are available. But what I encourage people to do is look at your food and know what's in it. Just a couple of examples. You know, oatmeal is always touted as being so healthy, and it is. But if we're buying the instant oatmeal packets, look at how many ingredients are on that list versus if you buy whole oats, steel-cut oats or old-fashioned oats, and make your own oatmeal. You know, flavored yogurt, it doesn't matter if it's low-fat, regular fat, or Greek, it doesn't matter. But if we look at flavored yogurt, the ingredients list on that package is really, really long versus plain yogurt that you add your own fruit and maybe some honey to. Fat-free mayo, the same thing. The list of ingredients, it's like 20 or 25 ingredients versus how many ingredients does it take to make mayo? An egg, oil, and some vinegar?
Well, you've inspired me. You know, part of my using the spray butters and other things like that was to cut calories. But I might have been the best thing to do.
I usually tell my patients, instead of looking at where we can cut calories, how can we make those calories count?
Mm-hmm.
So again, quality over quantity. The dieting era. I guess mm-hmm. we're all on a diet, but the dieting era has really taught us that It doesn't matter what you're eating as long as you're within your calorie range. It doesn't matter what type you're eating as long as you're in your fat gram range or your carb range or things like that. And again, we're getting so focused on these numbers that we're missing the main point. And the main point is we need to eat for nourishment, to fuel our body, to make it run efficiently and effectively. And we can't do that by putting the wrong fuel in.
Well, that's a good place to leave it. Thank you so much for being with us. This has been a very helpful hour.
Thank you very much for having me.
Marisa Pruitt is a registered dietitian at Gunderson Health System. Time now for our Monday morning wake-up call, and it is on a sign of spring, the pothole. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.